The Cyber Show is pre-recorded from our studios in Pebble Beach, California. This show is sponsored by Management Analytics, trusted advisor since 1977.
Hi, I'm Fred.
And I'm Chris.
And this is The Cyber Show.
Would you like to have some cyber fun? Join the show and the fun will come.
This week on The Cyber Show, Mark gets marked as the Federales keep calling him. Joe becomes a nuclear GE whiz. Research and advisory starts its trek. More fraud, spies, and lies, and much, much more. Only on The Cyber Show. Here we go.
No politics, no religion, none of the seven dirty words. Don't believe what anyone on the show tells you. Check it out for yourself. The views expressed do not reflect those of the management or owners of the station, the websites involved, the sponsors, or anyone other than the individuals expressing them, and in many cases, not even them.
Everyone, we have an announcement to make.
Management Analytics is hosting a new service offering that anybody with responsibility for cyber should be anxious to embrace. It combines the strengths of four of the top experts in the world to provide a low-cost entry-level research and advisory service that is affordable and informative. Each in their own area, they will provide a live online remote session once a month. So between them you will get a weekly dose of expert analysis, and an opportunity to ask them questions and get their answers. In combination, these four service elements provide unique insights into the path forward for your cybersecurity program, and they do so at an entry-level price point that is affordable to anyone seriously engaged in building or running a cybersecurity program. You can sign up for this service starting today by going to thecybershow.co and clicking on the service you are most interested in, or directly through The Cyber Show. We look forward to seeing you and hope you enjoy the show.
That was absolutely amazing.
Breaking news on The Cyber Show. It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month, and as a result, cybersecurity is all over the news. Except, of course, it's not. That's because of the horrific, disgusting terrorist event. But be aware, there are plenty of folks online who are exploiting this to create hatred. That's an influence operation that's already killing innocent people in the United States. How do we know we're being successful at The Cyber Show? Well, here are the five ways we know today. One, we know the bad guys are listening because we get updated versions of our spam emails addressing the problems we found on the previous versions. Two, we know the broader listening audience is paying attention because they've complained about our use of terminology that should not appear on broadcast radio. Three, we know the startups are listening because we get contacts from startups looking for assistance in funding and growth. Four, we know the cybersecurity crowd is listening because they contact us on LinkedIn using email and other forms to tell us what they really think about what we say. And five, we know the elites are listening because they say, Dr. Fred Cohen, we're listening. If you want to tell us what you think, you can email us by going to thecybershow.co. If you have questions, email those questions and we'd be happy to provide on-air answers. The Cyber Show. Only on KMBY 1240 AM. We're listening. Frauds, Spies, and Lies, and How to Defeat Them. It's the name of a book, and now it's the name of a segment on our show. Here's one that's becoming a classic in my inbox. It's from RSVP at K4PB.com. K4PB.com is a domain that I own, but it doesn't have any email associated with it. On the other hand, the RSVP address forwards to another one of my addresses. So it's from RSVP to RSVP, so obviously it must be fake because I didn't send it, and you can't send anything from that account because it doesn't have email sending capabilities. So, as usual, the subject is something intended to get you to respond to it, but I've gotten, I would say a dozen over the last couple of days of emails with this from to address pair with different versions of the same claim. The claim is,
there is an overdue payment under your name. Please, settle your debts ASAP.
And here's what it says.
Hi, sadly, there are some bad news that you are about to hear. About few months ago I have gained a full access to all devices used by you for internet browsing. Shortly after, I started recording all internet activities done by you.
So obviously ChatGPT has not been used by this guy, or Bard, or one of these folks. It might be a girl, I have no idea. But the language is just poorly done. So now, some of the scammers, as we've discussed before, intentionally do this to make you
think that they are not using automation or some such thing. But this one, you know, this is the same old scam, not exactly a new one. And I've seen the exact same language in other ones that have been sent to me with just different subjects and some with the same subject. So it's sort of obviously a scam, and that's the first thing you can do to detect it. If the language is this poorly done, if the wording is this poorly done, then they're not even sophisticated enough to use something like ChatGPT to generate for them.
Below is the sequence of events of how that happened. Earlier I purchased from hackers a unique access to diversified email accounts. At the moment, it is really easy to do using internet. As you can see, I managed to log in to your email account without breaking a sweat. RSVP at k4pb.com.
Of course, now the claim is that I broke into your email boxes on all of your devices, which is sort of astonishing because I have lots of devices that I've never logged into any emails on. But, you know, most people don't, so I guess it probably works in some cases.
Within 1 week afterwards, I installed a Trojan virus in your operating systems available on all devices that you utilize for logging in your email. To be frank, it was somewhat a very easy task, since you were kind enough to open some of links provided in your inbox emails.
So here there's a claim of a mechanism that was used. This is to bring realism to it, but really it's not that realistic. On the other hand, you start to hear the, I'll call it false pride coming out, bragging.
I know, you may be thinking now that I'm a genius.
Actually, that's not what I was thinking, but on the other hand, you know, if you believe that you're a genius, I guess you feel free to say it to people. Now, here's where it gets a little bit strange, because most people would not understand what a driver in a device was, although maybe it's becoming more widely known, but it sort of narrows the field in some sense. This person must somehow be a geek or think he's talking to a geek. Well, I guess I am, but that's another issue. But I think more to the point, it's sort of strange. I think he's trying to demonstrate some level of expertise, but I can imagine most people would say, you got access to my drivers? I don't have a driver. You know, I drive my own car. So it's sort of weird.
As a result, managed to download all your photos, personal data, history of web browsing and other info to my servers without any problems. Moreover, I now have access to all accounts in your messages, social networks, emails, contacts list, chat history, you name it. My Trojan virus continues refreshing its signatures in a non-stop manner, because it is operated by driver. Hence it remains undetected by any antivirus software installed in your PC or device. So, I guess now you finally understand the reason why I could never be caught until this very letter.
Well, more technobabble. That's what you would expect, I guess, from somebody like this. So all that technobabble, it means nothing, of course. Yeah, go ahead. Good reasons and excuses, claims of I'm super genius, blah, 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 blah. And then now, you know, I could never be caught until now. Aha, I've got you. Yeah, no. And then there's another notion that comes to mind. The reason you could never be caught until you sent this email is because you weren't doing anything until you sent this email. How could we catch you when you didn't do it?
During the process of your personal info compilation, I could not help but notice that you are a huge admirer and regular guest of websites with adult content.
Okay, well, starting here, it gets a little bit pornographic, and frankly, probably it's beyond the level of the stuff that I should be or may be allowed to say during the radio show. So I'm going to ignore the specifics that they asserted because you don't want to know or hear it.
In case if you still have doubts, all I need is to click my mouse and all those nasty videos with you will be shared to friends, colleagues, and relatives of yours. Moreover, nothing stops me from uploading all that hot content online so all public can watch it too. I sincerely hope you would really not prefer that to happen. Keeping in mind all the dirty things you like to watch, you certainly know what I mean, it will completely ruin your reputation.
Now, I've always wondered whether somebody that is into that stuff would feel their reputation was ruined or maybe it would be bolstered. So, you know, I never quite understood why that would work, but clearly now we're in the extortion phase of, you know, telling you about, I know what you did last summer, whatever the deal is. So the next thing that better happen is they better demand money. Well, obviously, if it's an extortion, they're going to demand something. So here comes the money play. I just want to note that if this stuff was real, if you had a real elicitation going on and you were actually engaged in those activities, probably money wouldn't be the next step.
However, don't worry. There is still a way to resolve this. You need to carry out a $1,450 United States dollars transfer to my wallet, equivalent amount in bitcoins depending on exchange rate at the moment of funds transfer. Hence, upon receiving the transaction, I will proceed with deleting all the filthy videos with you in main role.
Now, this is where it sounds so polite and so businesslike. Well, we have these details of the transaction and blah, 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 and the financial wording followed by, or we're going to release the dirty porn videos of you. It's just sort of a little bit of a discontinuity. It's pretty interesting.
Afterwards, we can forget about this unpleasant accident. Furthermore, I guarantee that all the malicious software will also be erased from your devices and accounts. Mark my words, I never lie.
It's an unfortunate accident. I accidentally, intentionally broke in, put Trojan horses in drivers on your computers and all of your other devices, recorded stuff, looked through it, but it was an accident, an unfortunate accident, sure. And, you know, being as you're telling me the truth so far all the way, you know, but trust me, I will never lie to you. Right, okay. Mark my words, I don't lie. I'll delete it all. You'll never see it again until next time I try to extort you from the same thing.
That is a great bargain with a low price, I assure you, because I have spent a lot of effort while recording and tracking down all your activities and dirty deeds during a long period of time.
Breakthrough price, new low price. You know, it's like, now I'm all of a sudden in salesman mode. You know, you want the best deal on extortion this week? You can pay me, blah, 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 blah. Look at all the work I've put in. I'm a skilled expert putting in lots of time and effort. I deserve the pay that you're going to pay me for.
In case if you have no idea how to buy and transfer bitcoins, feel free to check the related info on the internet.
Now, you know, here's where that low cost comes in, because apparently they can't afford a training video or some way to teach you how to send them the extortion money. You have to go look it up. I mean, you know, boy, I got a lot of effort in this on my side to pay off this extortion.
Here is my Bitcoin wallet for your reference. Attention, please. I have specified my Bitcoin wallet with spaces. Please make sure that you key in my Bitcoin address without spaces to be sure that your coins successfully reach my wallet.
Well, apparently people have mistakenly included the spaces in previous attempted transactions and had difficulty, and being unable to reach the extortionist, have failed to pay him. For that reason, he needs to explain just this one little part of the technology. I put spaces in, you need to remove them. You know, it's inconvenient to deal with this guy. I think I'm going to, you know, pay him less because, you know, frankly, you know, I'm doing a lot of extra work on his behalf.
From now on, you have only 48 hours and countdown has started once you open this very email. In other words, 2 days.
For this low, low price, you better hurry now. Act now. You only have 48 hours. Otherwise, bad things will happen to you. Yes, putting time restrictions is always a good thing, but that's a lot of time. You know, that's enough time to think about it, maybe, you know, accidentally talk to somebody and so forth. So, you know, if I was going to do this, I think I'd try to press them to be much more timely than this. It gives them too much time to think.
The following list contains things you should definitely abstain from doing or even attempting. Abstain from trying to reply this email, since the email is generated inside your inbox alongside with return address. Abstain from trying to call or report to police or any other security services. In addition, it's a bad idea if you want to share it with your friends, hoping they would help. If I happen to find out, knowing my awesome skills, it can be done effortlessly, because I have all your devices and accounts under my control and unceasing observation. Kinky videos of yours will be shared to public the same day.
Okay, same day service. Oh, that's pretty good. You know, usually it takes a day or two to release your pornography onto the internet, but they've got same day service, so maybe it's worth the price.
Abstain from trying to look for me. That would not lead anywhere either. Cryptocurrency transactions are absolutely anonymous and cannot be tracked.
Of course, that's not true. They can be tracked. They have been tracked and people have been arrested. But look, you know, truth and facts, that really doesn't play into extortion. It's all about perception. It's an influence operation.
Abstain from reinstalling your OS on devices or throwing them away. That would not solve the problem as well, since all your personal videos are already uploaded and stored at remote servers.
Of course, if I actually had all this access, I would not want you to get rid of the access, because how would I extort you next time? So, obviously, you know, bad advice from the people who are trying to steal from you after having broken into your systems, except they haven't broken in at all. This is just, you know, baloney. It's all a lie.
Things you may be confused about.
Apparently, this is the frequently asked questions segment of the extortion email, where we have to say, in case you're confused about this, here's the answer. It's, you know, oh my goodness, how bizarre.
That your funds transfer won't be delivered to me. Chill. I can track down any transactions right away. So upon funds transfer, I will receive a notification as well. Since I still control your devices, my Trojan virus has ability of controlling all processes remotely, just like TeamViewer.
Okay, but wait a minute. If you've been watching all my transactions and all these other activities, why can't you just take over my computer or fake being me and do it yourself? Well, apparently you don't have all that godlike control over my computer. You're just, that's right.
That I am going to share your dirty videos after receiving money transfer from you. Here you need to trust me, because there is absolutely no point to still bother you after receiving money. Moreover, if I really wanted, all those videos would be available to public long time ago.
Trust me, after I extort money from you, what else would I want to do except extort more money from you? I mean, hello. No, but trust me, I'm a trustworthy malicious actor who's broken into your computer system and is extorting. Forget about that part. Trust me, I'm trustworthy. And plus, you have no choice. Oh, wait a minute, it's not trust if I have no choice.
I believe we can still handle this situation on fair terms.
After all, it's only fair. I put in all this time and effort to break into your system and extort things from you. It's fair that you should pay me for it, right?
Here is my last advice to you.
Well, thank goodness this is at least the last thing that I'm going to be advised on from this person.
In future, you better ensure you stay away from this kind of situations. My advice, don't forget to regularly update your passwords to feel completely secure.
Okay. So now that I'm watching you change your passwords, you should update them so you can be in, or feel completely secure. You know, here's my advice. If somebody has broken into your computer, I'm going to change your passwords so I can see you change them again. No. Oh, my goodness. Every week we'll feature another cyber fraud to help keep you aware of what's going on and what you can do about it. If you'd like to read the book, Fraud, Spies, and Lies, and How to Defeat Them, it's available online at all.net under books. That's ALL.NET, and you press on books. This segment is called How Do They Do That? While threat actors already know how, many executives don't believe it's possible. We explain it so even a CEO can understand it. And that's how you do that.
Enterprise Leadership Network provides an intimate forum for C-level executives to gather and discuss key issues of the day. ELN is about building community, innovation, and collaboration with other ambitious, high-performing enterprise leaders through the exchange of ideas and information. You'll be able to participate in roundtable discussions, intimate in-person conferences, networking dinner events in your area, and a national forum. When you join Enterprise Leadership Network, ELN, you are welcomed into the fold of a private network of C-suite, senior executives, and accomplished VPs where you can build a solid network of peer relationships, carve out an executive career path, build your executive presence, and learn how to become a leadership and executive influencer. Take advantage of this unique opportunity to build relationships, grow your company, and affect positive change by attending and participating or sponsoring these outstanding networking events. For more details, become a member at enterprisemindset.com.
ELN will have a forum at the Monterey Plaza Hotel on November 13th and 14th. To sign up, go to thecybershow.co and click on the link to ELN. This is a little segment of the show we call Cyber Cops. Cyber Cops are the police officers and other law enforcement officials who police the cyber world. And this is their story. Mark Menz was one of the early folks in digital forensics, working for law enforcement and for the public well-being, as well as on many private cases. Early in my forensics career, I encountered Mark, and I thought you'd be interested in some of the things that we've done throughout the course of our lives and some of the discussions we've had. Here's Mark. Mark, welcome back. So when we last spoke, you were putting ticker tapes at the bottom of the video for Financial News Network. And at some point, you moved away from hardware into...
This whole time, I had this pain in the butt IRS agent calling me all the time because he was seizing computers that had our hard drive controller in there. And so he was asking me for some help on how do you recover data from these drives. He went on to found the forensic company later on, by the way. They became a standard for a short while of doing drive duplication and imaging.
Yeah, what was the name of that company?
I was SafeBack.
SafeBack. Oh, I remember SafeBack, sure.
Yeah. So wound up doing that. And then as all companies do, we had a falling out with each other.
You and your brother? Everybody else?
Just myself and the other, the head guy that we had, president of the company. I came up with a great idea, and he literally told me it was stupid and it would never sell. And that led to
a disagreement. And then you decided to prove yourself right.
And so I wanted to prove myself right, but I left the company. The guy I did it with stayed with the group. And they wound up doing the product. And it was such a loser. Oh, my gosh. They even called it Snappy. The video digitizer, which became the second largest selling peripheral in PC history. So that was my third, didn't get a penny for it, but I was proved right. I was right. It was going to work.
So keep it up and you're going to end up retiring only moderately. Okay. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Keep going. Let's roll forward here.
I decided that soured my taste on everything, so I broke away from the group, went up to another town, went to work for a company that made level controls, and wrote the software to reform the company and change the whole manufacturing system. And at the same time, I kept getting calls from law enforcement and the IRS to help with various little forensic cases. My stint up there ended after 3 years. And I came down and went to work for the National Criminal Justice Lab, which is where I met you.
All right. So when you say the National Criminal Justice Lab, tell us a little bit more about that lab and how that all came to be. Okay. So now, kicking around yet another, I invented something that changed the world and didn't make a penny on it, lost again, right? And had to get a job, right? So go to get a job. And then, the IRS, the FBI, whoever it is, they keep calling him saying, oh, come on, we need your help. And he ends up in that last transition that we're going to hear much more about now.
Right. You got to measure success by what it builds to, right? If I haven't made huge amounts of money off, some of the things I've invented and whatnot, but everything's led to something else. And it's been a hell of a life.
Sorry. The reason you have to measure it that way is because you didn't have have those $1 billion on the first one. And if you would have, then you'd probably be an obnoxious, so-and-so living in some big building and starting your own university in Silicon Valley or something like that, right?
I don't think so, right? I went through enough of the don't you know who I am phase early enough in my career to understand, and we don't know the path not led, right? I'd like to think that I never turn into a you people, but the saddest thing about it, since we're on the topic, right, is that it's such a short path to learn that lesson. You really expect better of people because, look, we have billions of dollars, or the hundreds of millions, the real massive wealth. You can be a great person and heck, you can do a lot of neat things as long as you don't take it too seriously. It's just stuff, right? But anyways, this cliche to even beat it to death. This is every, ancient story, look, read a religious text, right? Read some philosophy. It doesn't you know, lack of, don't get me wrong, poverty sucks, but, you know, grand wealth is not grand happiness. I'd rather be sailing boats. But anyways, an Environmental Justice Lab, right? You know, this, you know, my own path, you know, coming in this sideways, like kind of all of us, you know, with law enforcement, right? You know, always being the hippie kid, you know, and, you know, since my early teen years and working with all this, you know, because I believe in it, right? You know, I believe in the system. I believe in America, Canada, you know, freedom of speech, you know, democracy, capitalism, open systems, open standards, right? At some point, there's law enforcement, right? If you're going to have standards and systems, you know, we got to figure things out. And I'm proud of the work I've done from hearing about Mark and part of the work, you know, he's done, right? And it's imperfect, but, you know, National Criminal Justice Lab, you know, that sounds very familiar to me. I think, you know, early in my career, I cross paths with that. So again, small world.
I find, so first of all, I have to strongly agree with you. I believe in the system. And, you know, I don't think that's foolishness, right? I mean, you talk about pride in your accomplishments, right?
Yeah.
And I was, you know, brought up to sort of not do that. And because of my work on computer viruses early on, you know, I was certainly very proud of the work that I did, and I did it, you know, a lot of hard work to do it, but you get beat back very harshly for, you know, trying to claim too much, trying to, you know, putting your ego in there. Or at least I certainly did in my family environment. And then, you know, I ended up working at Sandia, and at Sandia, there was, you know, a very powerful person in that entity that disliked me greatly, and I think a lot of people in the classified arena disliked me greatly because of all the publicity that surrounded what I did. Even though I didn't create the publicity, I wasn't out looking for publicity. I was just going to do my job and, you know, do things that were interesting and new and so forth. And in fact, you know, Sandia did publicity around my work and ended up with, you know, near presidential visits and all sorts of, you know, national fame and so forth for the programs. You know, and yet I sort of got, you know, pushed back on by the people in the classified realm for the fact that their own entity was pushing me into the press. You know, I was like, and it's, you know, what is it? Wealth and fame. I'll take the wealth. Sure. I don't want the fame. Thank you.
Right. Yeah. I'll literally a shout out to the younger generation. I got 20-something kids, you know, Terry, Roxanne and Damien, that I could be more proud of. And being the age I am, though, it, you know, my peer group, you know, doing the things people our age do, which is to say kids these days get off my lawn and whatnot. The kids don't understand. In my childhood, mental health wasn't a thing. You know, my mom, you know, worked getting her bachelor's degree in social services, you know, worked at the Ridge Home for the Mentally Handicapped, which is not how it was termed in those days. Right. And that was it. Right. You know, in the career we followed, you know, in cybersecurity, as you and I have discussed, you know, great length, you know, it struck me 30 years ago that people would say social engineering and be done with it to wrap up all of human activity, right? In a security context, it's like, no, in fact, you know, and, you know, hold my coffee. We're a neurodivergent group by definition. Look around the room. It's a bunch of cybersecurity geeks that all got into this for weird reasons and weird ways. And we're on average, way weirder than average. And yeah, so throw us into, you know, environments like the top of national politics where, you know, you want to talk office politics. How do you get those jobs? How do you keep those jobs? It's complicated, right? So there's a certain meat to the grinder thing of it. And, you know, coming out of our generation, as you said, you know, I felt the same sort of thing as a kid. It's like, you know, try to get, you know, my dad, you know, just to be proud of anything. It's like, well, you know, like at a certain point, you're saying, well, you know, you can't be proud either. Like sometimes you got to stop him and say, hey, I did something cool and have a way to deal with it. But our culture just wasn't really good at that. So, yeah, we all got minced up in our own way. But again, it's been a hell of a ride.
I'm not sure you can say that H word on the air. I'll have to blot that out. But, yeah, my experience in that regard is, I think, quite different from yours. My kids, I am not the kids are, you know, stay off my lawn thing. I think kids today are fantastic. I see the generation that's coming up. My kids have been wonderful all their lives. They were, you know, I guess when I was young, you know, my the people that were ahead of me in the line talked about, you know, how I would find out when I had kids about the terror of having me, right? but it went the other way. So I mean, maybe I'm just lucky, but you know, maybe I ended up with the right spouse. But I suspect that you know the reason they were good kids is because they were good parents. They were brought in a good environment. They had a community that they were involved in of supportive people. They went to good schools and so forth. And I think that that's an underlying source of what gets people. You know, they're not driven in the way that I was driven. They're not driven in the way that you're driven. And I think that's a good thing, right?
I think it's wonderful. And to be clear, you know, I think we, you know, agree. I think kids these days are fantastic. And specifically on mental health. I mean, they've driven the conversation on mental health, you know, and you know, this whole, which started with, you know, simple, you know, white, black skin color, you know, by the time I was born and you were born and whatnot, and, you know, been brewing for a while, working its way through, you know, accepting people the way they are, right? And the mental health issues that started me thinking about this again, you know, we're, you know, we, you know, the Hollywood doesn't have it far wrong. You know, we are by definition a quirky bunch of kids that tend to get wrapped, swept up in these massive things that are way too complicated. And a lot of us are neurodivergent, right? You know, so we behave a little bit different, right? And there's no tolerance for that. And, you know, we didn't grow up in a time and a culture that was set that way. But I think it's really becoming that way. Again, I look at my kids and their generation, and it's a much more accepting, which, you know, to be clear, I think is more effective and more profitable and productive and a build made for a stronger national defense. You know, it's not just about, you know, soft issues of feeling good, which are bloody important because we're humans. But I think it makes the world a better place to be.
So I largely agree with you, but I think there's a place for stand and deliver. I think you have to be hardened to the world in order to survive some situations. And you have to be strong and thoughtful and so forth. And I think that one of the challenges that we face as a society is related to that, right? And you know, to keep it in the cyber realm, the enormous capacity to drive content into your cognitive system from the world, as opposed to, you know, when we grew up, the content being driven into your cognitive system was from your parents and your neighbors and maybe somebody a block away. And if, you know, you went to a public school, okay, people within, you know, a couple miles of where you lived, but you weren't getting this content driven in from all over the world, from, you know, people that are, you know, intentionally trying to subvert the national, you know, capacity to think and all of that. So I think that in the world as it lives today, kids have to grow up differently. Their minds have to be wired differently because they, now, you know, having said that, I was, you know, fortunate enough to be in the very, very early days of the ARPANET, you know, and before the internet was even a conception. So I was out in a lot of the world and I traveled a lot and my family traveled a lot. So we saw a lot of people, went a lot of places, but nothing like the exposure you get today in those years of your life.
Let me take a simpler analogy. You know, they'll seem more complicated, but on the scale of sociology and human interaction, it is what it is. But, you know, you mentioned strong strength. And while I agree, you know, I'm always struck with the, you know, the oak tree and the bamboo analogy, right? You know, but oak tree will snap. Bamboo will still be there, right? And I think as we look at the cyber physical systems we want to build, you know, like I think about all the time with boats, you know, we come from an era of, you know, big, huge slab of steel, keel, strength, structure. We add into that, you know, mechanical systems that become information driven and then, you know, cyber controlled with electric pumps and so on and so forth. And I think, you know, well, I'm of my time and I can't shake the idea. And I think there is something to be said about just, you know, strength, sometimes you need to stand on things. But the flexible systems we will physically build in the maritime space and in the rest of the world, right, that aren't just wheels that can withstand going 75,000 miles around and around and around, but are adaptive and more flexible and stronger, right? You know, they will actually be there after the storm. And I think that's the kind of thing, even on the much more complicated landscape that you bring, you know, talk about in the cognitive space, but I think that's what we're generationally moving into. You know, less concrete seawalls and more smart, you know, sea management systems.
So I think it's a combination. When I came up in fault-tolerant computing, there are some fundamental concepts. One of them is fault intolerance versus fault tolerance. And fault tolerance is about surviving the faults, you know, so they don't produce failures. But fault intolerance is about the quality that you build into it to reduce the faults in the first place. And you need them both, right? You need to build it better, but then it also has to be resilient against the failures that are inevitable, because everything eventually fails. Which brings us to the spaceship that you can build to go into the sun. And wait, we're out of time. I can't talk about it today, but I figured out how to do this, and I'll make sure and talk about it on one of the next shows.
Good segue.
We'll be telling more stories from Cyber Cops in our next show. So don't miss it. Next Wednesday, 9 a.m. Pacific time, KMBY, 1240 a.m. And on the web at thecybershow.co.
This show is brought to you by Management Analytics, trusted advisor since 1977.
Starting January of 2024, tabletop exercises supporting cybersecurity executives will be held at the ELN forums as well as online. Sponsored by Management Analytics and many of the A2E cybersecurity companies, these events will provide strategic scenarios helping executives explore the space of possibilities and create playbooks for their own enterprises while engaging in a friendly and supportive atmosphere where they can exchange viewpoints and learn from each other. This new forum event will help break down the boundaries, eliminate the groupthink, and get the creative executive juices going in a completely safe environment that focuses on concepts and examples, not in the specifics of your company. For more details or to sign up, go to thecybershow.co today.
We're having discussions with Joe Weiss. Joe is an old school control systems guy who worked on control systems for the first half of his career and ended up in cybersecurity by accident, as usual.
Joe, welcome back. It's good hearing from you. We were talking about your education in control systems, well, actually in nuclear engineering, which involves control systems. And we were starting to get into some technical level, but and we'll get back there later maybe. But let's continue through your life. So you went to GE, as I recall.
Yes.
And nuclear engineering, and that was on the West Coast. So tell us about, where was that?
Okay, this was in San Jose, California.
Okay, so wait a minute. Are there any nuclear plants in San Jose, California?
No, but ironically, I mean, basically, GE built the nuclear energy division at the site of where GE happened to have had an irrigation motor plant.
Okay, so this was literally, irrigation.
That's why. Yeah, and back in the 70s, you know, the nuclear industry was selling reactors, you know, all over. GE had built a plant years ago at Humboldt Bay, you know, way up Northern California. GE had a test facility they built in Vallecitos, which is the East Bay. There were all kinds of bids, you know, where people, again, nuclear plants were being sold all over the world.
Sold and built, right?
Sold and built, way back when they were actually not only sold, but built.
But, you mean they're sold today, but not built?
Well, yeah, look at, there were any number of plants that were sold. Some actually had equipment sent to the site that never, ever saw the light of day. There were many of those.
Okay? Oh, so that's a really good project. You build the equipment, you send it, they pay you for it, and then they never have to use it. So
and
all
they never used it.
No problem. Okay. If it's no good, you don't worry about it. But in the nuclear world, of course, at that time frame.
The national alert just went on.
Oh, yeah. We should talk about that. This is the national alert that's going to all the cell phones. Here it is.
Here it is.
Yep. And it's saying, this is a test of the national wireless emergency, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we're just going to say okay to that. Oh, and it gave it to me in Spanish as well. Thank you so much. So we're now alerted to the test system working.
Yes. But,
all right. So my feedback to that control system was to push OK twice.
Yes.
So that, yeah. All right. So good. So we can get alerted if there's something important in the cyber world and wonderful.
Continue. If somebody sends it, you know, in today's world, it's not always clear that what was sent to you was actually sent by who you thought was sending it to you.
Or it's what they originally sent.
Or what they originally said. So we have.
Or that you received it or anything else, right? We're not certain. But guess what? We were never all that certain anyway, right?
Well, I think there was a naivety that still is there, that if somebody gives you or tells you something or whatever, unless it seems totally, completely incredulous, you simply accept it.
Yeah, if it's not ridiculous, if it seems like something that makes sense to you, you believe it. And if it doesn't make sense to you, then you don't believe it. But mostly we can then change your beliefs. But that's a different subject, although it's not. It's still about control systems, right? It's about shifting
very much
to another through a control system. This is the cognitive control system.
Yes.
But we're going to stay for the moment in, you went to work for GE. Okay. So what did you do in GE when you went to work there?
Well, my one of my first jobs, which was really kind of interesting, is you have what's called the plant process computer. This is where all you store lots of non-safety documentation, da-da-da-da-da-da. And what was really interesting, here I was, this junior engineer, walking around to all of these senior people trying to document where all of the input to the process computer came from. And I honestly, without a joke, found the envelopes where people wrote things on the back of envelopes. I found those envelopes, and that was what went into this whole notebook I put together on how, you know, where the process computer came from, including the actual back of the envelope calculations.
Yeah. Now, isn't that just so cool, right?
It was phenomenal. I mean, when you're a junior engineer right out of school and you're talking to these people who are mentioning that you've never even heard of before, this isn't what you're studying or anything else. These are all of the practical things needed. Yeah.
This is the real world, which academia occasionally or always misses.
You know, it touches by accident. So
perfect. Wait a minute, because you said something there that I just have to ask about. You said the control system, which is not the safety system. And this is a critical point. So tell us about the separation of control from safety.
Okay. Now, what a control system does, and by the way, this is in everywhere. This is not trying to be nuclear for a minute. A control system is there to adjust and, if you will, optimize conditions.
Yeah, make the process work as right. well as
when it. We were talking about that pot of water. The control system is trying to maintain that pot of water at 80 degrees. Now,
yeah. So what about the safety system?
Now, there's a safety system to say, if you get to 90 degrees, I'm going to turn you off, because if you get to 90 degrees, you know, you can cause problems with that pot of water.
Well, okay? let's be careful here. So the safety system says, if you get to 90 degrees, I'm going to shut you off. That's a fail safe. Well, it's going to fail in a safe mode. That is not more energy coming in. But that's because at 91 degrees or somewhere beyond that, something will blow up, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it may stop it at 90 degrees, but presumably there's a safety margin, right?
Yeah. So that's what I was going to say next.
But you didn't say it the first time.
But I didn't say it in the first place. So which is great, because I keep thinking of things, but in my head they make sense, but I haven't said it yet. So, you know, 80 degrees is the optimal condition you want to run. 85 degrees, you're going to get an alarm saying, hey, you're getting too hot, do something. At 90 degrees, it's going to automatically turn off the system. Okay? The flip is that you may get the same thing on the lower side, that if it starts dropping down to, say, 75 degrees, you're going to get an alarm saying, hey, the temperature is too low. And at 70 degrees, it's going to shut you down, because it's going to say you're too low, and at too low, it could be a safety problem. Now,
so wait a minute. Hang on. Now there's a problem. Okay. Houston, we have a problem, right? So if it's too cold, you should be turning up the heat. But if you don't turn up the heat, it's just going to get colder, and then it's going to blow up on the cold side, right?
Well, but the whole point is what you're going to do is you're going to shut everything down. So the
you're
point
shut the whole process down.
You're shutting the whole process down. So
well, hang on. When you say shut it down, you have to shut it down in the safest mode available, right?
Absolutely. Now,
again, all right, so hang on. So fail safe is the concept, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
So there are things that you have to keep in a certain range or really bad things happen at either side.
Yes.
So how do you deal with the fail safe when each of the distinct failure modes are not safe?
Well, this is, again, part of the design. Remember, we're also talking right now about a very simple system. In reality, you don't just have a pot of water. You have a pot of water connected to 25 other pots of water and, you know, 50 other things. But
yeah, probably they aren't water. They're probably chemicals like at Bhopal.
They're chemicals. I mean, pot of water, you know, you're talking, you know, 32 and 212. But here, you know, this is again.
That's Fahrenheit. I thought you were in centigrade. That's why you were talking.
Yeah, no, I was just throwing numbers. Okay. But part of the design of a system is to make sure, number one, where is that limit that we must stop? And then when we stop it, how do we stop it so the stopping doesn't cause more problems than not stopping it?
Right, so, which takes us to nuclear design in particular. Now, the history of nuclear design, nuclear power plants, for example, had control rods. And when the control rods are inserted, the process slows down. They absorb more of the particles so that the process cools. And and it sort of slows down or stops the nuclear reaction. Yes. And the designs were such that the rods were up above and gravity would drop them down. So they
were
held by
electric magnets. That's for the boiling water reactor.
We'll get to it. So electromagnets would hold these things up. So if there was a power failure or some other problem in the control system, the electromagnets go off instead of staying on. Control rods drop down. The thing cools off and it's in a safe mode. Okay. So now... And you're right, that was for the boiling water, but there are other kinds of reactors with similar control. So there you're depending on gravity, and obviously if we lose gravity, we're in big trouble. Right? So that's getting down to physics, you know, if it's an outer space, you can do something else. All right, but hang on. So now the newer reactors, the designs that they have out now are these things where they have a bunch of spheres, and they're inherently limited. Unless the spheres get so hot that they melt, which the reactor can't get to, those spheres cannot get high enough density to cause the thing to melt down. So that's a safer system design. You don't even need control rods to make sure it doesn't melt. Is that right?
There are control rods, but what's really more important is today's plants need to force water into the system. And you have all of these pumps. Well,
but if something fails, the pumps can't force the water in because it failed, right?
Yes. So part of what the new design is what's called passive safety. So you don't need all of these external pumps where you're depending on the pumps.
It's inherently safe. If everything
fails.
As we touched on in the last segment, the example I use, you can't look at every atom in every, inch of pipeline. Unless sometimes you should, and as that consequence-driven, view of things. And I think for the topic of our show, for all cyber and all business applications, you want to look at cybersecurity and safety, look at the consequences. Is the consequence a meltdown of a nuclear reactor? Well, maybe you need to count out atoms, right? If not, there's probably compensating controls that can save you a lot of time, so you don't have to get that fractal.
Right, or at least do the physics, right? Because you're, even in a nuclear plant, you're not counting atoms one at a time, although maybe actually in some cases you are. You get to those rods that he's inserting into those. We'll see that in the next segment. And we're going to maybe get down below that level and see just how painful it can be. But, you can just see, you can feel how his view of the world is at the level of minutia. Right, it's going to be an equation. It's going to be one of these things. There's always going to be more details. You can never quite say anything that's right unless you really nail it exactly in the terminology. He's thinking of it in, and he sees the world that way, and it's really valuable.
It is. Right? Yeah. And, you know, for anybody who doesn't know Joe, Joe is everybody who works in OT security knows Joe. Right. And not always in a good way. Right. Because he is, you know, dogmatic, as you're saying, Fred. You know, he's going to follow this path, you know, all the way through. And that's the way it is. Right. And a lot of people in operational technology and critical infrastructure are that way. Right. They're that, you know, the old cliche, you know, the craftsperson with 40 years of experience sitting there quietly watching the young, enthusiastic person screw it up, you know, and then slowly walking over there and doing it right. Right. And there's a lot of value to that in this dynamic, kinetic cyber world where we're just going to run a bunch of Ethernet and turn the thing on. It's like sometimes physics matters. You have to do it right.
Yeah. And he's not in a big rush to get an answer.
Nope.
He's in a serious desire to get to the right answer. Yep. And he certainly believes, I think, that there is a right answer. And, you know, and this hurts. I'm sure it hurts. It hurts his career. It hurts, you know, he's unlikely to become an executive at Twitter.
Well, you know, that's a reasonable job.
Well, and he probably thinks that's a good thing.
Right.
As to why.
Well, and this is, you know, emerging areas like everything in cyber, like we're still emerging. But we like to think, you know, there, and literally there are people, you know, in their 30s who were born into this and, you know, but it's still emerging, very emerging. And in sub areas like cybersecurity and like OT cybersecurity and so forth, you have a small numbers of individuals, right? And they tend to be unusual folks because it's an unusual thing, right? And it's where we find our ability to work together. As you said in the last segment, I like to skim over the surface. I can't do that reliably unless I know people like Joe and like you who are going to say, okay, that's great, but stop right here. There's a cliff, right? You know, that will actually blow up. Like, I'm not using that metaphorically. So,
yeah, it's really going to blow up. Yeah.
Yes.
and so then the other thing is, you know, the analogy, and I just have to pull this back out, right? He's talking about education. He says academia touches by accident on the real world. That's, you know, he's been to school. He's taught it in school. But, you know, those equations are models, right? And there's always another equation at a deeper level, and you can never do all the equations. You can never get it exactly right. And those little things at the edge, you know, usually they're very little things at the edge. And every once in a while, those little things at the edge turn into big things.
I think one of the big benefits of academia is to teach an understanding of the reality of bureaucracy, right? You know, and particularly if you get an advanced education, you know, and you know, you'll find that it's the personal politics and careers and existing structures, you know, that have been battled for years amongst members of faculty, you know, that have a lot to do with the education you get. So, and again, in the cyber world, and even more so in the OT cyber world, you know, that's a big gap in understanding, because we like to think as a bunch of geeks and nerds and techs and so forth that we can find the algorithm and whatnot. And, you know, theoretically we could, but it's a human algorithm. You know, so why is it built that way? Because not because of physics, but because of human momentum.
It gets tricky. It gets really, really tricky. And, you know, you talk a lot about SBOM. And we talk about SBOM in terms of being able to define the composite by its components. And that's all great, but the interactions of those components, right? So if you have two components, they only interact with each other. But if you have 10, each one interacts with 9 others and the group of, you know, all the different groups of other ones. So all those interactions are much more complicated than any of the components. And we, you know, in the digital arena, we, let's say it's designed so that everything comes out to a 1 or a 0. That's the whole intent. But in the control systems arena, in the real world, you know, you can be off by 1/2 bit and not good. That's the So figuring out how many bits you need and how much time you have to spend, right? So there's sort of this theoretical result from long ago that if you're going to handle something that happens, you know, X times a second, you need to look at it X over X times 2 times a second. So you need to look at it twice as often as it happens to make sure you catch it. Well, it turns out if you want to catch it as it happens, you got to look more than that. And how much more? Well, we looked more and we found more stuff. And okay, well, then we better look at twice that frequency. Well, we looked at that frequency and we found more stuff. Well, how close can you look? Well, the answer is, well, I guess you could get down to the atomic particle. But that's an awful lot of looking. And by the way, how do you look at an atomic particle? Oh, a scanning electron microscope. Okay, but now how about the subparticle stuff? Uh-oh.
An article just yesterday I read, somebody just got an award for measuring an attosecond, I think it was, you know, a billionth of a billionth of a second, right? You know, and the, I believe, you know, electron orbiting a hydrogen nucleus takes 15 or 150 attoseconds, right? So now we, you know, you got to get down to that level if you want to count that, right?
Well, no, but you're only going to see 15 images of it. You're not going to see what happens between there.
That's right. So let me, you know, in the context, so you mentioned SBOM, the software bill of material, you know, this whole software supply chain thing. And this is my arc during the years, how complicated these things can get. So over the last number of years, the group that has been developing the SBOM standards have mostly been software producers and software consumers. And my interest really has been what you're talking about. How do we connect all these players together? And, you know, so if the conversation, the human conversation has been, I'm the software producer, I produce the SBOM. Now, someone else, some researcher might look at my software and produce another SBOM, but it's not the real SBOM, right? And then the software consumer is the one who's getting the SBOM. And, you know, I gave a talk at RSA this year with Kate Stewart, and we're just trying to think who the stakeholders are, right? And just in the electric grid, I got a vendor. Well, I have an integrator who buys a vendor's part and builds a substation. I got the utility that's running the substation. I've got the companies that rely on the power from the substation. I got the, you know, individual, you know, citizen at home, you know, who may be on life support at home or, you know, needs power, you know, to get through their day. They're a stakeholder in this SBOM. And it's only...
And all the companies that use electricity in their products, you know, they also have to know that component is producing power at the right, you know, look and feel. It has to be smooth enough for what I'm devising, right?
Right.
And the frequency has to be steady, right? Because you know that the frequency of the power grid shifts over time adjust for less or more power or energy usage and so forth. And then it used to be all the clocks were based on the 60 cycle a second. But it turns out that goes faster and slower, which is why those electric clocks get behind or ahead of time. And they're supposed to every 24 hours be about equal. And then you get the digital clock people that are always trying to compensate. So they undo what the power shift did and have to redo it when it shifts the other direction. Right? So there's just no limit to any of this stuff. If you want to get more and more accurate, you know, it gets harder and harder.
Well, but, you know, and even as we speak, you know, so I've been co-chairing the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency, CISA, SBOM Sharing Working Group that meets once a week. And it's a group of public and private people just trying to figure out how we share the supply chain intelligence. And only over the last couple months, we spun off a couple subgroups. We're now developing some documents. We're trying to think of, you know, because to your point, we can't get fractal with this. At some point, we have to give ourselves working models we can think about in our heads at least. And it's as simple and as complicated. It's taken years to get a consensus on this, but I think we're at the point where we can say, you're not a software producer for our purposes. You're an SBOM producer. You're producing SBOM. Now, you may also produce the software, but that's a subcategory. We'll forget about that. And you may not be using the software, you know, buying the software, but you're receiving the SBOM. You're consuming that SBOM. You're doing something with it. Right. And there's, you know, we're trying to figure out if there's a distributor category of actor in SBOM and supply chain intelligence sharing. You know, you're not producing the SBOMs, but you are sharing them, right? And so it takes a long time to think through these things to come down to what seem like simple principles. If we're trying to sort of replicate, you know, logically what, you know, to our point with Joe, you know, here is, you know, people have been doing in physical world for thousands of years.
So, Chris, you're dropping a lot of S-bombs, which is acceptable on the show as long as they don't turn into F-bombs. So let's move on.
Brought to you by Angel to Exit. We help grow companies. Next week on The Cyber Show, ELN leads enterprise networks, or something like that. Mark makes his mark on disks. Joe's picking up bad vibrations, and they're giving him new sensations. More fraud, spies, and lies, and much, much more. Only on The Cyber Show. See you next week.
A good time and bow. A good time and bow. A string-beating man and a fiddler for a band. A good time.
The Cyber Show was brought to you by Management Analytics, trusted advisors since 1977.